We are doing the Ramban Doshat Hashem Tmima, page Kufayin Gimel in the Mosader of Kuk edition. We're three lines from the next paragraph by comment number 84. And in this new edition, the Doshat Torat Hashem Tmima, Shlemavam Tukenet, it is page Kufhei. Rabbi Avraham, so he's quoting the Ibn Ezra. He goes the way we explained about the explanation of the Egel. And he made it into a secret. And in truth, it really is secret concepts. This concept that you could take down forces and there was capacity for this figurine to have some way of being a compass, a guide, and showing them the way to go travel through the desert, and that wouldn't have made it into an idol had they just used it for that. The way we discussed our whole class last time, and really these are things that people don't know, and I'm revealing all his secrets. Uvalashon hazeh amar, and this is what Ibn Ezra said. V'im tasim lev el hamasa rishon tavin zeh. If only you take note of the first traveling of the Jewish people, you'll be able to understand what was the concept of the building of the eagle. V'um hasheh amarti, and that's what I explained, that the angel that was going before them went behind them. And the verse also says God sent an angel who took us out of Egypt, that the angel redeemed them, that there was an angel whose job it was to save them. As the Ramban explained, that the angel that's responsible for the area of desolation is the calf. And that's the picture of the calf that's on the left side of God's chariot. And we said the left always refers to the north, which refers to the side of destruction. And that's why they thought that if they only make a figurine in the shape of that force that's responsible for destruction in the world, the calf, which was the force of Mitzrayim, then that's what they said. This is the force that's let us exist thus far, because in essence, there was an aspect that they were in under the territory of, call it this angel, this force in heaven, the force of destruction, the force of the calf. And they said, if we've made it this far in this area of desolation, then obviously this angel that's responsible for this territory is wants us to succeed here. And if we want to continue going and Moshe isn't here, then we need a way of bringing down the strength of that angel. However, we discussed it last time. B'nei yatzati arbe, the Ramban says, and I've digressed a lot, midarki lefaresh inyan nistau farsha tzicha be'u. I've already gone way off topic to explain a concept that's really hidden in a parsha in the Torah that really needs explanation. Now I'll come back to my place. Now we'll continue on topic. The Ramban had been going in order of the Torah and explaining the greatness of the Torah and the concepts that the Torah teaches us. So the Ramban described why the Torah has to begin with creation. And the Ramban described that the concept of first matter, and that the first matter was minuscule, and our understanding of how God created the world, and why God wanted us to have that understanding, and the importance of understanding the genealogy, and how that genealogy is one of the proofs of the truth of the Torah, that in such a short time span you can't invent something. And the Ramban showed the connection, the links, that you're only about four generations from creation to Moshe. You can connect the world. There were people who were around, and Moshe couldn't just make up the stories. People knew about the flood, and Moshe couldn't just write up a Torah and invent things when there were still people around who spoke to their grandparents who still saw what had happened there. The Ramban explained the importance of all these parts of the Torah that are a little bit unclear. We don't understand why they're there, so the Ramban gave us an explanation in that. So now he reaches the story of the beginning of the generation of Enosh. Yeah, Yehuda. V'kitzel v'amar ki echelu b'avodah zarah. The Torah, in short, just tells us they started serving idols. V'amar achakach sipur Noach ha-tzadik. And then the Torah tells us the story of Noach, the righteous. U'firesh l'cham shanim hayam mabul min ha-yitzirah. And the Torah tells us how many years passed from creation till the flood. And the Torah had to tell us the reason they were destroyed was because they were going with the forbidden women, people were going with married women, with their sisters, with their daughters. Because they destroyed their ways, they were punished. As the verse says, the Bnei Elokim, the leaders, the governors, they saw the girls of men. Uchtiv kishrit ko basar tarko. And then the Torah tells us they went rampant, they went wild after the women. And then the Torah describes it that all of flesh destroyed their ways on earth. The alinyan agezel, and the Torah also tells us one of the sins of the time was thievery. Dichtiv ki maleah haaretz chamas. The land was filled with forced thievery. And our sages tell us, doesn't say it overtly in the Torah, but our sages tell us that they were already commanded with the seven mitzvot, even though we call them the seven Noahide laws, but the seven commandments existed from the time of Adam, and that's why the people were held accountable for thievery and for arayos. Our sages derived it from the allusion of the verse, that the verse says, when God planted Adam in the Garden of Eden, it says, God commanded man saying the following, and we derive from that verse, from God's commandment about the tree, that within that commandment we also have allusions to the seven Noahide laws. But the Torah doesn't expand and explain the seven Noahide laws. Why doesn't it say it in the Torah? Because the purpose of the Torah is for the Jewish people. And the Jewish people were commanded all of these mitzvot at Sinai. Valderach ha-pshat, and the simple understanding, why doesn't God tell us in the Torah the seven Noahide laws? Says the Ramban, Elu mitzvot zichliotin. These commandments are logical. You don't need a Torah to know that you're not allowed to steal from your fellow man. You don't need a Torah to tell us that a man's not allowed to have incest. V'chol nivra makiret boro. And every creature recognizes his creator. Tzarich lizeher, man has to be careful of these mitzvot. Now that's fascinating. Because if you think about it, what's wrong with incest? Thievery, I understand. Paganism, I understand. The importance of setting up a justice system, I understand. But you tell me that if they tear off an animal's arm before they kill it, after they kill it, I can't eat that arm. Why? I understand that it's unusual cruelty. You have an animal to tear off a limb and eat it. But I don't understand why if they slaughter an animal and it's not yet dead and then they start chopping it up into pieces, then that's Eiver Min HaChai, I can't eat it. If an animal's foot got caught in the lawnmower, I can't eat that foot. And if its foot got caught in the lawnmower and then it died, I still can't eat that foot because it's a limb that came off when it was alive. So the Ramban tells us, all the seven Noahide laws are logical. I don't know. I haven't yet developed my logic enough. If we go to a contemporary, if we go to one of the rabbis, Rav Elchanan Wasserman, who lived in the time he was killed in the Holocaust, so he writes that logic should lead a person to knowing that God created the world, and when one reaches that conclusion, then he should also discover what does God want of him, and that should lead him to the seven Noahide laws, he'll find out. So that, I can understand. But what the Ramban says over here, he says, well, all the seven Noahide laws are logical. Could you explain to me the logic as to why incest is forbidden? Meaning, it's a physical act. So, I if we went the route and said, deep down every person has a connection to God, and deep down every person knows that what he's doing is wrong, and he knows that really there's something else out there. So long as he hasn't found God, there's a thirst inside him, he can try to cover it up. So that's the route the Kuzari takes. That the king keeps having these pangs of guilt, he keeps having this recurring dream, which might be just an allusion to the feeling that a person has inside of him. If he'll only listen to that feeling, he knows that he's not doing right. So that'll lead him to search, and then he can discover it. But the Ramban isn't saying that. The Ramban is saying that the seven Noahide laws are logical. Unfortunately, this Ramban is beyond me. I don't know what it means. And I'll tell you, I'm not so far off base, because other Rishonim, like Ibn Ezra, they say that the Torah implemented within humanity this concept that incest is prohibited. A man with his daughter, a man with his sister. Why? There are different understandings among our sages. Why is it prohibited for a person to marry his sister? Why is it prohibited for a person, if his father died, for him to marry his mother? So to us, it's already anathema. We think of it as like something that's just abnormal. If someone did it, we think there's something psychologically wrong with him. We really feel that way. But if you... What? Oh, we have to ask ourselves, though, can we explain it logically? I'm listening. Go ahead.
I don't know if it's logical, meaning a person or like a creation, something living, naturally wants to remain alive and sustain the, you know, the, what do you call it?
So why can't the father marry his daughter?
Because we know now scientifically.
Now.
We know that if siblings marry, then genetically the child could have problems. So you should instinctually, most animals like don't do things that will harm the species. So if after a few generations they'll see this is harmful, so they should naturally stop.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just to maintain the species, because that's just a natural thing for any.
I hear. Okay. Yeah. But you're talking about a feeling. You're talking about a natural inclination. The Ramban says sichliot. Sichliot means logical.
Right, but it's logical to assume that they would have at least animal instinct. Like
okay.
Any animal also wouldn't do anything to harm their species. I think that's part of that kind of natural.
I hear. Okay. וכול נברא מכיר את בוראו וצריך להיזהר מן. And every creature really recognizes his creator and has to be careful from these mitzvot. וכמו שנאמר באברהם, as it says by Avram, God says, I know Avram educates his children, he educates his home, ושמרו דרך השם, and his home maintains, watches the way of God, אף על פי שלא נצטווה בו, even though they weren't commanded to keep the way of God. But that's the way they live. So the Ramban here gives us, as the Ramban has been doing throughout this letter, the Ramban in two sentences gives us a tremendous thought, something that really we could sit and try to work on for a long time, and we'll keep reading. But that's what we've noticed throughout this work. But the Ramban says things in passing, and each line or two is its own gem. And here we just had one of them. Bulai, what? That the Ramban said that the seven Noahide laws are logical. The simple understanding is that even though the Torah does not say them overtly, every person is supposed to reach them from his own logic. You could say that maybe you have to connect the beginning of the sentence with the end of the sentence, even though I'm not sure how we do that, where the Ramban says, and every creature recognizes his creator and has to be careful from these mitzvot. I'm not sure how to understand that sentence. I hear. I'm not sure that's what the Ramban is saying. I'm not sure what the connection is. There are logical mitzvot, and every creature recognizes his creator, has to be careful from these mitzvot. Maybe what he's saying is, along the lines of what you're saying, if I recognize my creator, then I recognize that I have to act in a logical way. A person might say, yeah, it's logical, but so what? It's logical, I shouldn't steal, but...
Every one of the other six benefits the man in one way, and this one is like, why can't I do this? You know, don't steal, no one's going to take anything from me. Don't murder, no one's going to murder me, but I'm going to kill an animal, but I can't kill it that way, and what's going on? You know, it's the one thing that isn't directly affecting them, it's the one thing that twists their mind to think from another perspective, to go deeper.
I hear. I don't know. Huh? Okay. ואולי בכלל חמאס, שפיכות דמים וראות שהיו עושים זה לזה. And could be when the Torah says the land was filled with חמאס, so חמאס doesn't necessarily only encompass thievery. Maybe it also encompasses all forms of harm that people inflict on one another, such as murder, etc. כעניין שנאמר, as we find the verse says in the prophet Yoel, נחמאס בני יהודה אשר שפיכו דם נקי בארצם. From the Hamas of the sons of Judah who spilled clean blood in their land. So you see that even murder is referred to as Hamas. So it could be that when the Torah says there was Hamas in the land and that caused the destruction, the Torah is referring to murder as well. And now the Ramban is moving forward. And then the Torah recounts how Noach was saved due to his righteousness. His children and their wives, they were all saved in his merit, or bizchutam gamken, or in their own merits as well. Shatzadik mitzavet manavet beto lishmor derech Hashem, because a righteous person, he commands his children and his family to maintain the way of God. V'chol zeh devar baruch. So all this is clear. And that here, the Ramban isn't saying it overtly, but he spelled it out earlier, that this is one of the concepts that the Torah is teaching us, that when a person is doing what's right, then God says, ultimately, I will save him. That's what we saw in the Ran and we saw in the Ramban. The Torah doesn't overtly tell us about the Garden of Eden for the future, but the Torah does describe it about the past. The Torah doesn't overtly say, I will give you Olam Haba, but the Torah does overtly show us how Noah, Avram, people who went in the ways of God, God protects them. So the Ramban isn't spelling it out here, but he is saying the Torah told us how Noah in his righteousness was saved. And I think that's one of the points the Ramban's alluding to. V'siper kama yimei amabul, and the Torah makes a point of telling us for how many days was there a flood, le'amet ha'davar ulhodia be'iruro, in order to validate this point, so that it will be clear to us the truth of the flood, and we should know how clear it is that this is what happened. V'yesh rabotein od midrashim tovim, and our sages have all kinds of midrashim about the number of days. Why was it for 40 days? Our sages say, Hem kilkelu tavlad, they ruined the concept of pregnancy. Shenigmala arbaim yom, a fetus is formed in 40 days. V'akadosh baruch hu dan otam kach, so God judged them in 40 days. U'mishpatam shnei masar chodesh, and it took 12 months for their judgment to be complete. Remez l'mishpat arshayim b'geinom, it's an allusion to the time that the wicked are judged in perdition. V'anachat ha'teva b'arei Ararat, and the fact that the teva landed on the mountains of Ararat, the Torah tells us the specific location, Lever Inyan Amiti, to clarify that this really happened. Uvar shamati b'makom ploni mipi ploni. And we've already heard that people say, I've heard from that place, from this person, people say exactly where it is. So the Ramban saying, you know, there are people who tell us that they know exactly where the teva is, and even today, if you look it up, it seems like they know exactly where the mountain of Ararat is and where the remnants of the Teva are. And that's a very important point. B'inyan brita keshet mevo'ar. And the concept that the Torah tells us of the covenant of the rainbow, that's also clear. Lo'odia kama yigia ma'alat Noach v'tzidkato v'avodat korbonotav la'gen letoldotav le'olam. To tell us how Noach's level and his righteousness reached a point that his service of God was able to protect the future generations for eternity. Noah brings the sacrifices, and God says, okay, you've convinced me. I will never again bring a flood. U'mimenu yikru raya kol avdei Elohim. And from him, all servants of God can learn how much they can benefit the world if they really reach their potential. Ve'od shenida b'ma nitkem ha'olam b'dorot chayvim rabim she'avru. And also it's important, so that we understand why is the world still extant. Meaning, there were many generations that were tremendously sinful. So why didn't God bring around the flood and destroy the world? So the Torah tells us, God made a promise, I won't do that again. I will not destroy the world, even if the world devolves. But really, the concept of the rainbow has a great secret. Shekvar be'er aristo, Sibat erut hakeshet b'sefer ha'otot. Aristotle already explained the natural reason why a rainbow appears in his work, Sefer Ha'otot. Ba'katuv amar, and God says, Et kashti natati ba'anan. I have placed my rainbow within the cloud, ve'lo amar etin keshet ba'anan. God didn't say, I will place the rainbow in the cloud. God said, I have placed the rainbow in the cloud as a sign. V'tovashtika, and it's better to be silent. What does the Ramban mean? So, the Ramban in Bereishis explains that really there's a natural understanding as to how you see a rainbow, right? The water forms a prism, the sun goes through the prism, and you see a rainbow. That's the way God created the world from day number one. When God tells us, at Kashti Natati Ba'anan, God is saying, that rainbow which I placed within a cloud, notice it's speaking in the past tense, now that rainbow will be a sign for this concept. Et Kashti, the rainbow Natati that I have placed, past tense, from the day of creation, Ba'anan, within a cloud, that will be the sign from now on for this concept. There's also a deeper secret about Keshet, what Keshet refers to, and for that you need people who know secrets, and that's not me. There. Good question. It could be that beforehand there was a natural occurrence just like rain and snow. And God says, from this day onward, that the rainbow will be the sign for the covenant between us. Meaning, let's say you and I make a covenant, we make a pact, and we decide that a Coke bottle will be the sign of the pact between us. So whenever we meet, we could place a Coke bottle on the table. That's the sign for our pact. The Coke bottle existed beforehand. From now on, that's the sign for our pact.
Well, I guess that reminds you of water.
What? Okay.
Water and rain, which is...
Makes sense. The Rishonim also explained that in ancient times, the way of showing peace was that the person would turn the gun towards himself. They turned the bow towards themselves. And the keshet is like a bow facing towards heaven. That God is saying, so to speak, I'm facing... Yeshua, I'm not shooting towards you. Like a guy who holds the gun facing himself. I'm not going to shoot you. So by the same token, the keshet is like a bow facing towards heaven. But God is saying, I'm holding the bow facing me. I'm not shooting at you anymore. That's a rainbow goes like this, right?
Right. So if you're pulling back the bow, you're shooting it down.
Okay. You have a string. You have a bow.
Right.
When you pull the string... So if the rainbow corresponds to the bow, so then the bow is facing God. It doesn't correspond to the string, it corresponds to the bow. And the Torah tells us the story of Cham, Lodia Onish Makle Aviv, to tell us the punishment of the one who shamed his father. Ki hu gadol, for it is great the punishment of one who shames his father. And that God heard the curse of the righteous one, the curse of Noah, that his offsprings, Ham offsprings, would be a slave of slaves, distant from God, until they were cut off by those that are chosen by God. And here again, what does the Ramban mean? It seems that they were cut off from the land of Israel. Does he mean that they were completely wiped out? That would seem to be what the Ramban is saying over here. Hichritu literally sounds like they were annihilated, which might refer to the mitzvah of the Torah, don't leave over anyone from the tribes of Canaan. And according to that, again, we have another gem that the Ramban says in passing, that the Ramban is giving us an insight as to that mitzvah. That this was a fulfillment of the curse. God was saying, they're the offsprings of Ham and Canaan, and they're going in his ways of deriding their parents. And therefore God says, you will fulfill the curse of Noah, and that's why we have the mitzvah, according to the Ramban, of not leaving anyone behind. Our sages give a different understanding in the mitzvah. Our sages say that the smallest remnant is going to be an archenemy of the Jewish people. Because they'll always say, we want the right of return. We want to figure out a way to topple the government. We want to figure out a way of taking back the land from you. So that's what our sages say. But the Ramban is giving us a different understanding. And the reason that Canaan was cursed and not his other children, Ham had many children. Why was Ham and Canaan cursed and not the rest? So I say that the other children weren't born yet. So Ham only had Canaan. And that's why God cursed Ham and the son that was around. But the children that weren't born yet, they weren't part of the curse. And even though the Pasuk mentions the other brothers before Canaan, that's because they were on a higher level than Canaan. The Pasuk is putting down Canaan because of his behavior. So that's why when the Pasuk enumerates Ham's children, it enumerates the other children first. Kush, Mitzrayim, Ufutu, Chanan. It leaves Canaan for last, even though he was the firstborn, says the Ramban. V'chen b'chol makom. And that's why we find all over, Uvno HaKatan, Hu Ham. The Torah refers to Ham as his small son, even though technically he wasn't, but because Ham was on a low level, because of his behavior, he's referred to as a small son. Aval Yefet u'agadol, Yefet was really the firstborn. Ve'itchil mishem le'malato. But when the Torah enumerates Noach's children, it says, "V'nei Noach were Noach's children." Shem, right? Because Shem was bigger. Kederch Yitzchak v'Yishmael, just like we find when the pasuk enumerates them, puts Yitzchak before Yishmael. Moshe before Aaron, even though Yishmael was older, Aaron was older. V'chen mechol makom, and that's how we find all over that the Torah, the ordering of the Torah is in the order of importance. Chutz mimu'atin, except for a few exceptions. Chutz mimu'atin betoladot, v'chamu asheni l'shem, uchti v'chi yefet agadol. And Cham was really second to Shem. Because technically, if the Pasuk would have said in the order of their greatness, then the Pasuk would have gone completely out of order. It would have said, Shem, Yefet, Cham. So no one's in his proper place. Cham was second. So like this, the Torah at least put Cham in the right place. Uchtiv, and that's why the Pasuk points out, Achi Yefet Agadol. His big brother was Yefet, to tell us this point, that Yefet was really the oldest. V'chein Katuv, and just like the Pasuk says, Shem ben Matshana, Shnatayim Achar Mabul. Shem was 100 years old, 2 years after the flood. Shenimtza Sheyefet Gadol, Shtei Shanim. And when you do the math, turns out that Yefet was 2 years older than Shem. Yefet was the older brother. V'zeh Pshat Agun. And this is a fitting Pshat, he says. וכן בייחוס תולדותם, בני יפת גומר ומגוג, ובני חם כוש ומצרים, ולשם יולד גם הוא. And so too, when the Torah tells us their genealogy, then it goes in the order of their ages. It tells us Yefet, then Cham, then Shem, because that's the order of their ages. Yefet was the big brother, then Cham, then Shem. כי מפני שאיחר שם, שהיה לו להריך בתולדותיו, מפני אברהם אבינו, הקדים אתה יפת לחם שהיה גדול. Being that the Torah purposely wanted to leave Shem for last, because the Torah would go into great detail to tell us the genealogy till Avram. So that's why the Torah already went in the correct order, putting Yefet, then Cham, and then Shem. The Ramban then goes over to the Palaga, but I think we'll do a little bit of run. Yeah? The nation of Babel. The nation that was scattered. I guess we won't finish today. Yeah? What's the vote? Do we go over to the run, or I don't think we'll get to finish anyways. The run? Okay.
So when we are saying cork,